Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People. On today's episode, we've got Sam Bricknell from Tech Visa. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you.
Hey, Tech Visa. Normally on this podcast, I've got technical people from Newcastle. This time, we're going to have a conversation about something slightly left of field because Tech Visa operates in our tech environment, super pertinent to the current environment in Newcastle. So for those that don't know either who you are or who Tech Visa is, give us a bit of a background.
All right. So start off with me first, I guess. Yeah. So coming from a recruitment background myself as well. So I spent 10 years in recruitment, all with Hudson. Kind of different roles within that as well. So mostly in the IT space. So have an understanding of that kind of area. And then for the last bit, I was working up in Brisbane, recruiting recruiters Hudson. And I guess the thing that kind of started the business idea for me was the person who was doing all of our visas coming into Hudson, every time you'd speak to him, like he'd be in London or he'd be in Thailand or he'd be in Melbourne, you kind of think, I want that. Like that lifestyle, that's good. This is all pre-COVID, so obviously everyone was kind of chained to their desk, and this was a bit of an anomaly. So, went back, studied, and then started the business after that one.
What did you study?
It was migration law.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it's a year course. Went back and did that one, and then I guess it's like anything. When you start a business, the first year you go backwards, and you're trying to just kind of like clambering for anything you can kind of get through.
Yeah.
And then we really decided, like, we rebranded, went under Tech Visa.
Yeah.
And then it just started to happen off the back of that. Once you really specialize in something, you get to know it really, really well. You're not having to go back and research everything.
Yeah.
Like every time someone calls, you don't have to go back and like go through legislation. It takes hours and hours to do.
Yeah.
Because we're only in this space looking after a few types of visas for certain sectors, we can just give you the answer straight up. We've got a few competitors that have got some amazing clients in our space that we'd love to work with.
Yeah.
But in saying that, like we've kind of, we're across the market. So all of those little kind of tech startups and scale-ups that are coming through, if our name is always thrown in the mix whenever they start hitting this problem of, they're starting to scale, they're really struggling to find people in the local market. So, people are throwing out there on Slack or something like that, our name pops up. And because we're known in that space.
Yeah,
so
nice. Yeah,
it's working.
So Tech Visa was born out of the, you've seen that opportunity. I think probably the COVID played, I think it ruined a lot of businesses, but probably created opportunities for Tech Visa as well, given the shortages of talent that we're now facing in Australia.
Definitely. And it's everything that kind of pops up, you think, okay, this is going to hurt us. This is going to destroy the business. We don't know what's going to happen. But actually, every time there's a problem or something pops up, it means that people need more help to navigate whatever's happening. And at one stage there during COVID, I think there was 400 people a day allowed into the country. And that was it. So there's planes coming in that were pretty much empty.
Yeah.
But if you're an engineer or a designer or something, then we're able to help to get people in during that time. So that really helped kind of solidify us in the market. And also just with layoffs that were happening right at the start of COVID as well, all those transfers of people moving between companies, you're on a visa, you've been let go, need to transition somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's just actually kind of caring as well. So we weren't kind of going after thinking, okay, this is a money grab, how can we make more? It's like, okay, this sucks for these people.
Yeah.
Been let go, you're on a visa, you're temporary, you've got 60 days to do something about it. How can we actually help you like sleep better at night by knowing that someone's got your back, helping out wherever we can?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of power in business as well. Tackling things from that aspect. Obviously, you're in business from a commercial aspect, right?
Yeah.
You're making money at the end of the day. But I think anytime you can attack business from either a community or an individual, helping an actual individual perspective, the commercial outcomes on the back of it will pay dividends.
Yeah.
But not attacking it from the pure commercial aspect.
No, you don't go in for money. No. And it's like the community side of things is huge in this space. So you look at everything that's happening in Sydney, like we're down at the Blackbird thing next week. We did something tech last week, and it's all kind of everyone's out to kind of help each other. And obviously people are fighting for talent, that's one thing, but outside of that, no one wants to see other people fail in this space because everyone knows how hard it is to start something from scratch.
Completely agree. And I think that community aspect has definitely been a big part of our success, but I think a lot of the smaller companies as well, as they grow, building a community and actually engaging in that community as opposed to being just seen as somebody commercially profiting off a community, actually somebody engages and gives back and helps facilitate in that space is that's sort of the differentiator, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And the partnerships we've got along the way. So, know, it's not, nothing is, I guess, exclusive, but we partner really closely with like Airtree and Blackbird and a few of the other VCs. So again, it's not like they say you have to use Tech Visa, but it's just our name is put out there when companies are having that real struggle.
Yeah, nice.
Having to hire, yeah.
Yeah, right. You mentioned COVID just before, and obviously we went, you know, pretty deep into lockdowns and yeah. real trickle of people coming in. But now those restrictions have started left. What sort of changes have you seen with, you know, more talent coming into the country?
Yeah, I mean, it's open, I guess. So yeah, restrictions have lifted. It's not necessarily post-COVID, but yeah, people can come in more freely now. I guess the biggest thing for us is things are working. Like things are starting to move along. They're clearing the backlog of visas for people offshore. But up until really recently, we just couldn't give any clarity on timelines. Like if you're a recruiter in the UK and we lodged a visa for you late last year, it might still not be through. But someone who lodged 2 weeks ago might have been approved already. So it was just, we've got no control over that aspect of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just been, I guess the changes that have happened in the last maybe 6 months or so has been the best for the market, because things are starting to clear. You know, there's more people coming through. There's more people coming into the market, which means there's more kind of movement happening here as well. Plus, even with funding, it's certain markets, yeah, okay, it's dried up a little bit, but other ones have popped up and there's more kind of going into areas like climate tech, for example. So,
yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So you're seeing, are you seeing more and more companies, obviously given there's a massive talent shortage, starting to look at other options? I think most companies traditionally were, hey, I want to hire somebody locally. They've got to be in the office 5 days a week. I'll put an ad on Seek and I'll find the best, you know, available.
Yeah.
You can't do that with technology talent anymore.
Yeah.
And I think people are starting to look at different avenues. Have you seen a bit of an increase or an acceptance of companies sponsoring? Is that a trend going that way?
I wouldn't even say it's a trend. It's always been a thing where if you've never done it before, it's too hard basket.
Yeah.
So like, why look at it? You know, we'll just find someone local. It's going to cost too much. It's going to take too long. And that's where the education piece from us comes in, and the, like, say, agencies we partner with as well. It's when you shortlist, it's not just saying, here you go, here's a resume for a developer from Brazil. It's like, okay, it's a problem for you, but we've also got a solution. It only costs this much. It's going to take approximately this long. And yeah, they might be an absolute standout in the market as well. So it opens up their talent pool massively if they're open to looking at it.
Yeah.
But we get it as well. Like, you don't want to go through that process if you don't have to. If you can find local talent, 100%. Like, and we're up for that as well. Like, we want to make sure that everyone gets like the easiest solution. But it's only if you need that really senior person in a market that's not that mature in Australia yet, and you need to get someone in to help to train up those grads underneath, then this is a solution you kind of look at.
Mate, excuse my naivety and maybe some of those others in the market that put it in that too hard basket.
Yeah.
But if I'm in the technology space at the moment looking for a senior engineer and I've exhausted the market and I need to start looking at these type of options, and what's that process working with somebody like Tech Visa look like?
So first stage, I guess, is just, give us a call and send through the resume of the people that you're looking at potentially moving ahead with.
Yeah.
So there's no point in getting in touch necessarily and like setting up if the problem's not there. Like when you find that person, we can do the whole process like as I guess one piece of work. So say you've got that resume comes through to you from a developer from overseas, say they're from Germany or something. We assess it first for you and just go, okay, yes, they're eligible. We'll come back to you with the best options. And I guess coming from that recruitment background as well, we're not just kind of, okay, we'll do a 4-year visa and we'll just sort that the short term.
Yeah.
We look at it and kind of go, okay, we get attraction is one piece, but retention is key and keeping those people in your business. So we'll look at it and say, okay, what are the options right now, but also in the medium to long term? So we'll go, we can sponsor for 1 year and then they're eligible for PR within that 12 months. So let's do that, because then they're engaged with the business. Hopefully they love the work there, like the product they're working on.
Yeah.
But they've also know that the company's got their back. You know, they're looking at those longer term options there. So once you send the resume through to us, we'll assess it, come back to you with a breakdown of costs, kind of timelines, what it all looks like. And then it's a decision of whether you move ahead with that person or not. But at least you know you're not going through 5 or 6 rounds of interviews before saying, oh, okay, we want to do this, then realizing it costs too much or it's not something you want to do.
Yeah.
We can get to that problem earlier. You know, by the time you get to those next rounds of interviews, yes, okay, we'll move ahead with this person. We know the risks. We know everything about it. We know the costs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned the retention piece there.
Mm.
Do you find that companies that do sponsor somebody originally, there is that extra loyalty of somebody that, you know, helped facilitate their visa and potentially help facilitate them getting a PR. Do you see like there's a, you know, a longer tenure, more loyalty from a professional and a candidate perspective?
It's hard to say because we don't necessarily do the recruitment piece. So we don't see the retention of the Aussie citizens and stuff. But yeah, there's an element of it, definitely. And especially if you look at it and you go to them with a plan, it's not just, yeah, we'll sponsor you and we'll look at the other steps down the track. It's like, okay, this is our plan. This is what we're doing. We want to keep you here. So yeah, I'd say there is like an element of loyalty there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which sort of like, we're obviously, you know, invest in the tech industry at the moment. Is there any particular type of roles that you've seen the most success with? Is it in the engineering space or that more senior space, hard to fill? Is there any, you know, sort of success stories that you can sort of speak to?
I think honestly, everything's pretty hard to fill at the moment, like across the market. Everyone's kind of feeling the same pain, whether you're looking at recruitment or you're looking at marketing or you're looking at, you know, the senior engineers.
I guess there's
a few areas that we really enjoy being in. So there's a company on the Gold Coast called Gilmour Space Technologies. So they're building rockets. So they're actually sending payloads into space, and you just can't find that kind of talent onshore.
Yeah.
So it's companies like that that you look at and kind of go, okay, we know that we're actually helping to build up an entire ecosystem with bringing the right people in to the space. It's like Rocket Lab in New Zealand. You got SpaceX in the US, and they're attracting some of the best talent to come over. And that is creating an entire kind of market of, space technology in Australia. And again, in like climate tech as well, there's one over in Perth that we work with called Ulu, and they grow seaweed. So it's carbon capture. Then they harvest the seaweed and they make plastics from that as well. So it's all this kind of stuff where you just know we're a part of this kind of bigger solution as well and kind of what's going on.
Yeah. And definitely it seems like, you know, it's a partnership model, right? As opposed to, you know, you're actually helping facilitate, you know, these companies and continue to grow their teams as well.
Yeah.
And it's not just, you know, oh, a company come in, use once, and then, you know, never to be seen again.
Yeah.
It's more of that partnership model.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
nice.
And it's that's the fun part about it too. So it means you've got a relationship with the founders. It's ongoing. And, you know, it might be they don't sponsor anybody. They just hire locally. That's amazing. Like, that's great. But down the track, if they do need to, then we're there and we understand their business. We know what's going on. They don't need to, I guess, reinterpret their whole business to another person down the track, because, you know, we've got a stable team, and it just means that, you know, they can come back and say, we're going to need another person in the same thing we did last time, and like, bang, we can make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mate, do you have any thoughts on what's going to happen in the next few years when it comes to this space? Do you just see, you know, more and more talent coming in internationally to Australia? Any other thoughts or trends that you might be seeing?
I think just mobility is big now. So it's not just about people coming in and sitting at a desk, like you said before. So in like chained to the desk for 5 days a week, you know, that mobility piece is big. That's why I've just recently opened in Singapore, and we've got somebody who does the US stuff for us as well. So companies can move people around depending on, you know, where the work piece of work is, and they can be in the same time zone as the team who's on that piece of work for the business.
Yeah.
So I think it's, nothing's going to change necessarily. Like, people want to move around, people want to do different things. It just means it's less of, you know, they have to come to Sydney and sit in Sydney because that's where the job is. They could be able to move around a bit more. So hopefully that kind of comes through a bit, where there's a little bit of flexibility in the visas where you can kind of come and go, but it still counts towards things like permanent residency and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a definite trend that's not going to go away, right? I think COVID changed that, forced everyone fully remote.
Yeah.
And there's now a bit of a hybrid or, you know, remote first type trend that will continue to go. And I think that's not going to stop. I think now people have been given that freedom and that flexibility, they're not willing to give it back, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I've noticed too, like a lot of people we speak to, everyone was up for remote first, and now it's kind of coming back around. Like, people quite like the hybrid side of things. So you want to be in the office, you want that kind of bit of camaraderie, you know, you want some kind of community building and just someone to kind of bounce off every now and then, rather than kind of sitting at home and just communicating over Slack or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think there's a part of human nature where, you know, being around other humans as well, you know, continue to play out. And I feel like individuals have gone through the fully remote stage, well, fully office stage before, fully remote stage, and now trying to figure out exactly what works for them. Some people continue to say fully remote only because that's what works for them. And others will find that middle space as well. But I don't think there's too many people out there, you know, knocking on the doors to be back in 5 days a week.
No, not really. No. That works well.
Mate, there's a few countries now offering visas in around digital nomads as well. Is that something you're seeing, you know, a growing trend, or is that impacting your business at all?
So, I mean, it's a trend because, there's a few countries that have kind of brought it up recently. They tend to be kind of those ideal little locations, you know, like Bali, I think, is happening. So for Indo. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't work against us. It's something which, I guess, it's that whole mobility piece. You can't just be in another country, like ongoing. So, okay, it's something which is there. It might be an in the meantime type thing, but there's still tax laws around that. So people can't just set up there forever. They still need to move around. So visas are still going to be a thing that people need to access to get into other countries where they want to be longer term too.
Yeah. And I think, you mentioned before, like the individual part as well, it might not be just going to Bali, live to Bali forever, right? And
yeah.
I think it's the opportunity to go to Bali and potentially spend 12 months there or 6 months there and then, you know, come back as well.
And it can work for businesses. So if you've got, say, a sprint happening as part of a piece of work that the company is doing and the people are in Europe, if they can come into, say, Bali for a short period to be a part of that sprint in the same time zone and not have to deal with some of the visa issues to get into Australia, then yeah, that could work as well. But again, you're still remote. So it's still, you don't have that community piece. You don't have that kind of interaction day to day with other people in the office. So it's kind of, it depends on the individual, where they want to be. And some, like you say, happy to be remote so they can be in Bali, that's fine. Other people just say, no, I want to be around the team. So, yeah, they come to Sydney or Newcastle or wherever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Man, I think the other piece that we're so starting to see more and more of is that diversity within teams as well.
Mm.
And not only diversity from a, you know, from a male and female perspective, but actually diversity of different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's a lot of opinion pieces out there and there's a lot of success stories around companies building, you know, more diverse teams and people from different backgrounds and having successes with that. I think, is that a trend, I guess, with, you know, I guess, again, more people coming in internationally that you're seeing in some of the tech teams that you've helped build?
Yeah, like I don't see anyone who's doing it like as a deliberate kind of, I guess, hiring strategy or anything. It tends to just be, you know, hire the best person for that role and what you've got open at the moment. And so if it happens to be someone who's from overseas, then great, let's get them in.
Yeah.
The other thing we kind of see too is if you get, say, for example, one Brazilian developer in, you tend to build out a whole team of Brazilian developers as well, because it's all kind of community and they all tend to know each other.
Yeah.
Like they went to uni together or something like that. So similar kind of knowledge base and tech stack that they're across.
And if you're on something that's working,
continue with what's working. Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't always work, but yeah. So diversity is kind of, it comes and goes with different teams and everything, but it's, I guess that's part of what we do is, you know, if we're getting people in from overseas, then it does kind of broaden that out a little bit for places too.
Yeah, I think so. And I think like being in Newcastle, Newcastle technology scene of 10 years ago was traditionally white men and white men only.
Yeah.
And that's changing. It's slow, but it is definitely changing. There's definitely significantly more diverse technology teams based in Newcastle than there was 10 years ago. And it's a good thing to see. And I think most of the technology teams that I talk to actually talk super positively about, you know, the different influences and the diversity within the teams and the success they have on the back of that.
Yeah. So with the clients we work with, so say up here, you're not deliberately going out trying to like source people from overseas. It's if they happen to come through, it's not just excluding them straight away and saying, you know, it's too difficult, not going to look at it. It's just saying, okay, actually, you know what? It could be good for the business, but actually they're just the best person I can see for the role.
Yep.
So let's explore it in a bit more detail. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, you decide you just want to go for someone maybe a bit more junior locally, then fair play as well. So
I think in Newcastle as well, we have that influence from the university as well, where people do come into the country to study at University of Newcastle and then trying to keep those people locally into our local tech ecosystem is something of real benefit, but does play into a lot of those people do tend to have those visa issues and then companies maybe aren't set up to do that.
Yeah. And the good thing is there's been some recent changes too, where if you're an international student, you come out, you finish your course locally at university, then there's the 485 visa, which is like a graduate one, which means that there's no outlay of cost for the business. The people can be in your business for 2 or 3 years and then they can look at what the next options are after that. So and then it's for the person, you know, they get to choose, okay, is Newcastle where I want to be? And for the company, they go, okay, is this the right person for our team? And make sure it just fits from both sides too.
Yeah, I think the biggest you know, comment or the issue that you've helped, you know, solve, it's just that it's in the too hard basket. A lot of companies would definitely, this is one step too far for me. I don't know how to do it. Too expensive, too hard.
Yeah.
You know, put it to the side. But given the talent shortages of the last couple of years, people are now having to look outside the square.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, having conversations with tech visa.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, simplifies that process and just provides that information up front to
it. Yeah. And that's it. Like we don't go in with a sales pitch. It's just that we'll chat through your situation, go, does this work for you? This kind of timeline work for you? This kind of cost work for you? If it does, then great. Yeah, we can help you out. And we kind of sometimes like oversimplify it, but like from your perspective as a business, you shouldn't need to go into the detail. Like if you want it, we'll definitely give you the detail, but for the most part, that's our job. You're paying a fee for us to take that problem off your hands.
Yeah.
And then we get the outcome for you as well. If there's even things like, you know, writing statements around, you know, what the role is going to be or what the business does, we do all of that stuff. We just send it through for a bit of a quality check and then signed off on letterhead. So you're not sitting there having to kind of recreate the wheel. Like, yeah, if it's already been done, we know how it works. We know what we need to do to get it through.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's, I guess, what we can kind of bring to the table for you.
Now, I think there's solutions like this and making it available to Newcastle-based companies is going to be a continual benefit to the local technology community as well. It gets more people in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Helps more Newcastle-based companies attract and keep that talent.
Mm.
Anything we can do to continue to build the ecosystem here locally is definitely a benefit. And I think this is just an aspect of which was, I was keen to get you guys to come in and share what you do on the podcast, because I just think it can be a massive benefit to the local technology ecosystem, and adding to that and adding new talent and keeping talent in Newcastle.
Yeah, and what you got too is the location. I mean, it's so sellable to people overseas. We were having a coffee down on the beach today, and it's idyllic. It's where you want to be. I don't know why you'd want to be anywhere else, actually. Like, it's just, it's sunny, like, it's nice coffee, and then, it's like walking distance to wherever your office is going to be as well, generally. So,
nice.
Amazing place.
Yeah. Mate, you mentioned right at the start of the conversation today your background.
Yeah.
Something I think might be interesting, the technology professionals that we speak to or our audience here, is like that career change. I think a lot of technology professionals go through that. It's not a traditional, has to be go to school, go to university and follow that direct career path. As opportunities, people jump and change.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've done that. You went down the recruitment path.
Yep.
Gone back, trained, and then new career. Can you just give our audience, I guess, an insight into your thought process going through that? Was it just there's an opportunity? Is it a passion?
Yeah, it was just scary. That's all I can really say. So when you're first doing it, going back to study, and it's like, okay, I'm going to look at doing this change down the track. But everyone wants to kind of just put their toe in the water and just kind of test it while you're still in your job. You've got that security, kids and mortgage and everything as well. So making that jump at that time was pretty full on. I actually got to a point where I was doing a visa for somebody at Hudson.
Yep.
And then I got a call from the business just saying, you can't have both. Like, you're working here or you're doing that thing for people who work here. So that was the push I kind of needed. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm out then. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And so I went out with, my pipeline was one person for 2K, and that was it. Nothing else kind of on the radar, but it was the best thing I could have done. Because if you're kind of, you're just putting your toe in the water, then it takes a lot longer to kind of ramp up.
Yep.
If you're all in, then you have to make it work.
Yeah.
So it was just, a full year of, working the back room of the house in Brisbane with no air conditioning and no fan, and just kind of trying to make stuff happen. And again, like I said, kind of a lot of tire kickers coming in as well, and just trying to, asking questions of stuff that doesn't actually come off. So you're spending a lot of time on things that just didn't eventuate to anything.
Yeah.
And being, I guess, bootstrapped, like, we didn't have funding, obviously. It was my little business, and we just kind of kicking it all off. And it was just, it had to work. That was really it. So it did. And after a year of just kind of, working pretty hard, and Natasha and I kind of made it to a point where it started to actually get some traction. We had a couple of really good clients that we won in Sydney that all of a sudden started referring us onto other businesses. And then, we were away.
Yeah, nice. And I think it's super pertinent to a lot of technology professionals I speak to as well, that, hey, they're in a job day to day, but they've got a passion project to the side and they're maybe working on that after hours a little bit.
Yeah.
Either building a piece of software or an app or something like that.
Yeah.
And they want to jump in, but, again, kids and mortgage or other commitments in life that forces you, forces you to hold back or stay within that, that day-to-day stream. It sounds like the fact that you were nudged over that, over the edge was probably one of the biggest successes for you.
It was a good thing for me, but also it's very different. So from a services business point of view, when you do a piece of work, you get paid for it.
Yeah.
If you're building a product, then you've got no income until that product's in the market and it gets traction. So really different. And I guess you need a lot more, runway as well. If you're building a product, you need engineers and stuff. You can't just sit there and just build it yourself and know that you're covering off like the build and like the UX and the UI and then the marketing aspect of it all as well. Like, there's so much more involved. So it doesn't necessarily relate perfectly, but the nudge helped me.
Yeah.
And as long as if you've got that runway, then the only way to kind of make it happen and make it happen quickly is going all in.
Do you have any, that first year must have, I know, I've been through it myself.
Yeah.
That first year, it's stressful.
Oh, it's terrible. Highs
and lows. Any one piece of advice, if you had one key piece of advice that you'd give to anyone that's going to go all in and start in their own business?
I mean, the thing for us is when I first started, it was trying to be everything to everybody, but that niche aspect, that was key. Once we did that, you get known for that and then you get traction and it takes off. So that's my biggest piece of advice.
I love that advice
as well. Just know your market.
Fantastic. Mate, for any Newcastle-based businesses who are, you know, struggling for talent attraction, especially in the technology space, may have seen a candidate come across their desk and be like, oh, I need a visa, or they need sponsorship, don't know how to do that, too hard basket. What's the easiest way to get in contact with you guys just for a conversation or some more information about that?
That's it. So just send us an email. So it's info@techvisa.com.au, and then we can get back in touch with you and just chat through the process. So you don't need to send us anything. It's just an inquiry and we can organize that conversation. They've also got like a contact us on the website as well. And then from that point, you can make that call of whether you send through the resume, and then we can do that full assessment for you. If you don't even have a resume and you just want to know that you can be set up, so that you know you can start targeting people who are here on visas, then just get in touch that way as well.
Appreciate it, mate. Yep. I think that'll be super helpful for some of the companies locally.
Yeah, nice one.
Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you.
Cheers.
All right.